call it perverse, but interest rates are low even as the stock market stays strong. Question is the economy good or bad?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We're starting this day with a 10-year Treasury yield below 2.5%, a very low 2.47% as trading got underway on Wall Street, even as the S&P 500 was still above 1,900 earlier today. Economist David Kelly is Chief Global Strategist with J.P. Morgan Funds. Morning, Dr. Kelly.
Good morning.
You come bearing, I think, a paradox for us?
Yes, we've got long-term interest rates are very low, and that would normally be a sign of an economy that's weakening. But on the other hand, stock prices are at an all-time record high, and that's a sign of an economy that's strengthening. So the question is, you know, who's telling us the truth? And when we look at it, we think the stock market is telling us the truth here. We've got 4 months in a row, we believe now, of payroll employment growth over 200,000. So the economy is getting better, and I think there are just certain technical factors which are pushing down long-term interest rates.
The interest rates also are probably dampened by, for instance, Europe.
The European economy itself is gradually getting better, but I think central banks' purchases of bonds around the world are really distorting the global bond market, and that's the principal reason long-term interest rates are so low.
And before you go, David, for the first time in 5 years, we see this morning that unemployment in Germany ticked upward, and one reason given for this unexpected weakness, wait for it, the strangely mild winter they had in Germany. Are you kidding me?
That sounds like a pretty lame excuse, but actually the German economy is doing fine. I wouldn't pay too much attention to 1 month's data here.
Perhaps they should pray for the polar vortex and see what happens. David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds, thank you very much.
Anytime.
We have been following a recent IRS ruling underscoring how serious the Obama administration is about encouraging employers to keep providing health insurance to their workers. If companies stop offering the benefit and give employees a stipend to help cover costs on the new health care exchanges, they must treat that as taxable income or face fines of more than $30,000 a year per worker. From the Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
There's some thought that as the Affordable Care Act picks up steam, employers will get out of the healthcare business. But PricewaterhouseCoopers' CeCe Connolly says that overstates what she's hearing from company executives.
They're saying, we want to know what our options are, particularly for saving some money.
You'd think dropping employee health insurance might do that, but Connolly says the math is pretty clear. As long as companies can write off contributions, employers and employees make out better than if workers got a stipend for an exchange, because everyone would pay taxes on those stipends. Brian Marcotte with the National Business Group on Health says many employers question these exchanges.
What's different in terms of how care is delivered? Is it any better than what's being done today?
Many of the country's largest employers are self-insured. Marcotte says businesses continue to believe they can do a better job controlling costs, but would be happy for the exchanges to prove them wrong. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
And staying with the business of healthcare for another few seconds here, the story that is hitting the news this morning that is certain to garner a ton of coverage involves the drug companies Eli Lilly of the U.S. and Sanofi, based in France. There's word they're teaming up to see if regulators will allow them to sell the flaccidity treatment medicine Cialis over the counter without a prescription. Today, Marketplace is launching a year-long look at education and technology. We're calling it Learning Curve. Adrian Hill is the lead reporter on the project. Good morning to you, Adrian.
Hey, David.
What are you up to here, my friend?
Well, we're going to look at all the ways technology is changing the way our kids are learning. We're going to talk about the great promises of all this educational technology and the peril of it. We're going to report on the way it's being used to help kids learn in different ways, things like personalized learning, and all the data that's being gathered along the way.
And presumably how the money flows what might call the ed tech industry?
There is a lot of money. We spend over $1 trillion with a T dollars on education in this country every year. And billions of that are going into technology. It's actually a number investors think could go up as much as 15% a year for a while. So lots of money here.
So quite a beat. But where do you start?
We start at the beginning. We're going to start with the history of machines in classrooms. The idea that technology is going to change schools isn't new. There was hype around film back in the 1920s, then radio, instructional television, microcomputers. The question is whether this time, this cycle of technology is any different. We're also collecting stories about our own early experiences with tech in the classroom. And I wonder, David, do you have any?
Well, I had a mother, Ruth Brancaccio, a teacher who used multimedia to teach junior high English. Huh. Super 8 film cameras. There was a open reel black and white video recorder. Now, it wasn't digital, but it was, in fact, tech in the classroom, I think. She used to leave the education magazine Media and Methods around the house, which I would devour.
Really? You'd read it?
I thought it was fascinating how, you know, you could play with stuff. It wouldn't just be books.
At what year was that again?
I don't know. It must be like 15 years before computers hit the classroom. Certainly the early 1970s.
Great. I love it. Add it to our Tumblr page.
All right. Sure will. Marketplace's Adrian Hill, thank you very much.
Thank you.
On the Marketplace PM show later today, Adrian will have a look at the fascinating and sometimes checkered history of technology in schools. And we invite you to add your history to a timeline on this subject at marketplace.org. Look for the words learning curve. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.